Je vais laisser la parole donc à Eduardo Fernandez Guerrero, qui est à l'Institut universitaire européen, qui va effectivement nous présenter une communication, si son titre n'a pas changé. Quelque peu peut-être.
Non, ça marche comme ça.
Ça marche comme ça. Donc, Sanget Rex Magnus Cum Magno Pastore, Prophecies and Theology of Messianic Kinship in the Early Modern Global Empires. Et donc, la parole est à vous si l'ingénierie vous suit.
Bien que j'interviendrai aujourd'hui en anglais, s'il vous plaît, veuillez poser vos questions en français ou en italien et je les répondrai de mon mieux. So, first of all, I would like to thank Professors Peter Stoh and Boucheron for the organization of such an interesting venue and the chance to meet all of you and listen to your amazing work. The topic I was determined to tackle when I received that invitation and the one I would like to discuss with you today are the same, although they differ in the ways that lead to them. Both, however, stem from the research around a text containing the alleged revelations given by the angel Gabriel to a Franciscan friar in the last years of the 15th century, known as Apocalypsis Nova. Today, as the title reads, I would like to say a few words about these two figures or characters of the Christian messianic tradition, the angelic pope and the emperor of the last days. My argument is that during the early modern period, they experienced a shift in terms of importance and popularity that is to be connected to, at least, new notions of kingship and ultimately, perhaps, modernity. As you will see, I will focus more on the history of book production and reading through the case of the Apocalypsis Nova, but I'll still touch very briefly upon the theological grounds behind such ideas. The Apocalypsis Nova consists of a long series of revelations and sermons written in Latin, mostly dealing with theological and exegetical issues, such as the Immaculate Conception, the creation and fall of the angels, and the untold lives of Jesus and Mary. In one of its most popular passages, the Apocalypsis Nova describes the conversation of its alleged author, the blessed Amadeus, with the angel Gabriel about the imminent arrival of a Pastor Angelicus, a messianic angelic pope who would reform the church and bring a golden age of peace and justice. Although his identity remains secret through the text, he is clearly the main character of the prophecy, appearing frequently in all of the raptus or revelations that make the text. Indeed, the hopes for the Reformatio Ecclesiae had been consolidated around him, together with the expected miraculous conversion of Jews and Muslims before the end of time. However, in the last pages, there is an unexpected, very short reference to another figure next to the angelic pope. With the great shepherd, a great king will come, and God's will shall be perfectly accomplished. This Rex Magnus, a universal monarch who would unite all peoples under one kingdom, according to some of the manuscripts, is not mentioned anywhere else in the text. And yet, it would appear that the readers quickly noticed him. In the prologue of the Vexillum Christiana Victoria, a treatise about divine providence, Giorgio Benigno Salviati dedicates the work to the King of France, Francis I, just a decade after the discovery of the Apocalypsis Nova. Well, I'll skip reading because I have too much to say, so you can read it here. But the specific part is, which you can see somewhere there, when he talks about you, Salviati is quoting Amadeus, and he's saying, there's another saint who speaks about you when he's talking about this great king, it's you. Salviati, who was most probably the real author of the Apocalypsis Nova, was searching for a candidate for the Rex Magnus, prophesied in his text. In fact, a few years before, he had dedicated the same text to Emperor Maximilian, in very similar prophetical terms. And yet, despite these attempts, it was the angelic pope that was instinct with all of the millenaristic hopes for a golden age, as it's obvious in the remark he makes when introducing the Rex Magnus as the companion of the angelic pope. Compared to his importance in the text, the Rex Magnus is a secondary figure, a support role mentioned only in the end and briefly. However, during the 16th century, a series of changes would result in an overall inversion of these two figures' importance within Christian prophetic literature. Indeed, unlike Salviati, who tried to convince a monarch that they were called to rise as the Rex Magnus to accompany the Pastor Angelicus, the case in Spain of Pedro Isabel bears witness of this inversion in the mid-17th century. Isabel, a sacristan from Aragon living in Granada, had received a number of visions in which he was anointed by the Virgin and the Archangel Michael, among others, to become the universal king of the whole Christendom. After moving back to Zaragoza, he gathered a small court made of his supporters, and there, a few years later, the Jesuit Francisco Franco would arrive and claim for himself the role of the Pastor Angelicus, who, as prophesied in the Apocalypsis Nova, had to rise together with the Rex Magnus. The long history of its circulation from the early Renaissance to the end of the early modern period, the wealth of prophetic traditions it combines, together with its vast geographical reach, make the Apocalypsis Nova a particularly useful case to understand the inversion of these two messianic figures, the Rex Magnus and the Pastor Angelicus. This contribution argues for the existence of a secularization process and a rereading of religious prophecies in political terms in the modern era, due, we will see, to the development of a new political theology of Iberian monarchies in the context of their global expansion. The alleged revelations of Amadeus combine an interest in the mysteries of the faith, of the Christian faith, is still unknown to humanity, with the arrival of a shepherd chosen by God to reform the church and prophesied several times in the text. In fact, the text presents itself as some sort of handbook for the reform, whose discovery is the foremost sign of the imminent arrival of the Pastor Angelicus, and with him, the end of abuses and the beginning of a new age of justice and peace. And this is the description of that moment when God will choose someone following his will, his heart, and he will convert everyone, and there will be, again, as we have heard today, only one flock and only one shepherd. The figure of the angelic pope, who appears so often as to even nauseate the reader, as a Franciscan chronicle writes, constitutes a clear thread through the text. Originated in the context of Pope Alexander VI, the need for a reform that would put an end to the abuses of the ecclesiastic hierarchies was a widely shared feeling within the church at the time. In fact, at some points, the description of the angelic pope seems to be an inverted portrait of the Spanish pontiff. It's the part where he says, Canones et antiquas patrum consuetudines observavit, omnes pravas leges et consuetudines extirpavit, basically the opposite of what Alexander VI was doing, or at least the bad myth around him. The ubiquitous presence of the Pastor Angelicus becomes much more evident when compared to the total absence of reference to earthly monarchs in the text, to earthly rulers. The Rex Magnus, together with other rulers, appears only at the end of the fourth raptus, after a series of political prophecies exposed that it's actually very weird and doesn't match with the rest of the text in terms of like language and style, which is what you can see here. Venetians will join the angelic pope, and every like all Italy will help prepare a fleet, and then there's this series of sort of verse prophecies like Anglia in grandi angulo posita est, lei dipoteri, de sepius lei detra se ipsa, and so on. These forecasts are not part of any political propaganda campaign, as it's frequent in the case of medieval Iberian prophecies, for instance. As prophecies exposed, it is composed after the events they allegedly prophesize. The role is to convince the reader of the truthfulness of the main prophecy, which is the arrival of the angelic pope, and with him, that of the Rex Magnus. This rationale explains their location within the text. It is always after a detailed description of the imminent arrival of the expected new pope, as the most evident signs of the tempora felicia. For instance, in the fourth raptus, when the Blessed Amadeus asks Gabriel about the exact time when the angelic pope would come, The angel replies with a cryptic series of events that would mark the moment of his arrival, which, translated, are none other than the fall of the Visconti house in Milan, the arrival of Charles VIII to Italy, and the end of Aragonese rule in Naples, all of them which had happened before the composition of the Apocalypsis Nova. But maybe the most important element of these passages is their plasticity. Indeed, these political prophecies ex post were constantly updated to bring up the latest events and thus connect the text with the latest readers. Such is the case of the prophecies about the popes who would precede the Pastor Angelicus in the Fourth Raptus. While in the oldest manuscripts, the series ends with a reference to Alexander VI, which is Venit post illum bos cornu petae taurus non bos, other later manuscripts add to it reference to Pius III, Julius II, and Leo X. Which are those you can see. The obvious lunata is Pius III. The rugitu, like the vox rugitus, it's Leo X, obviously, and so on. So this plasticity and flexibility plays a very important role within the changes that lead to this inversion in terms of importance of the messianic figures of the Pastor Angelicus and the Rex Magnus during the 16th and 17th centuries. To illustrate these changes, it's enough to examine the different reading formations, to use the Tony Bennett's term, in which the text was read. And while this is not the place to offer a systematic picture of that circulation, because as you saw, it's too much, there are plenty of examples of these messianic hopes placed first on the angelic pope by the readers of the Apocalypsis Nova in the first phase of its readership. Indeed, the first part of the circulation was marked by the importance of theological contents and those on the Reformatio Ecclesiae. For instance, its discovery in 1502 is described by Salviati as the revelation of arcana ingentia and the incredible secrets that God will soon operate in the church, without any mention to the Rex Magnus or political prophecies that he appeared with. It's in fact the angelic pope that the readers expect, such is the case of the apostolic protonotary Bernardino dei Conti di Meda, who in 1525 described Amedeo's alleged book as a book really angelical, because there are so many mysteries and things unknown to our doctors and explained in an amazing way, while he also praised that God would grant him the grace to see this pastor chosen by God that is mentioned so many times. And it's also the case of a beautiful manuscript in Venice where Nicola Vegano, who also writes elsewhere that this is the third time he copies this book, that this is a secret work full of pneumate, of like Holy Spirit in here. Which will be explained by the angelic pope, who will pandit conscripta, explain the contents, tenebras tollete media, will take away the darkness, and will help the good people. These everlasting hopes for the Reformatio Ecclesiae and the role of the angelic pope in it is clear too in the overwhelming amount of religious owners of copies of the Apocalypsis Nova during its first phases of circulation. Thus, during the 16th century, the text appeared mostly in the library of religious orders and cardinals, but only rarely in lay hands. Among the first, Franciscans obviously played an important role, as the order to which both Amadeus and Salviati belonged was the Franciscans. General ministers of the order had shown interest in the text, requesting copies to be made or sent to them, but so did other less important figures. Such is the case of the theologian and Kabbalist Pietro Galatino, who would insist repeatedly on the importance of the Apocalypsis Nova in his vast literary production about the Reformatio Ecclesiae. In his Ecclesia De Ecclesia Restituta, which is a fascinating, rich, complex compilation of prophecies about the future reformation of the Church, he writes about the angelic pope that on this topic of the angelic pope, Amadeus has spoken so incredibly that no one else will ever reach such truth and such exact contents. The early copies of the Apocalypsis Nova could be found in Benedictine, Servite, Jesuit libraries, and among the later, whose prophetic inclinations still require the attention of historians, they showed some interest in the myth of angelic pope. In fact, Francisco de Borja himself and many others within his order, considered the possibility of being the angelic pope, as Ignacio de Loyola writes in a letter to him, and that includes, obviously, Guillaume Postel, who was a reader of the book, and so on and so forth. The book itself was considered by some readers as the Book of the Angelic Pope, like that, which is a title that reads as such in a partial translation into Vulgare of the fourth raptus from mid-16th century. This passage, titled Profetia cavata dal libro del pastore angelico, and containing the description and arrival of the promised angelic pope, was indeed a very important in the circulation of the text and the messianic hopes it helped to articulate. This can be seen in the second translation of it, which this time was printed, that appeared in Venice in 1525, with some other texts published by the priest Paolo Angelo, who would experience as well very similar revelations to that of Amadeus in terms of content and also format. Then I'd like to go back to the image to make a point, which is that the fascinating thing about this is that on the one hand, most manuscripts of the first phase of the circulation, say the 16th century, obviously more or less, tend to have glosses on the angelic pope, comments on this, and many of the 17th century copies will have no reference to it, will show no signs of reading by the readers on that on those passages about the angelic pope, and instead you will see notes about Napoleon, for instance, in a Bologna manuscript, or other earthly rulers, or no notes at all. But the interest on the angelic pope disappears as we enter the 17th century. So the process of inversion between the messianic figures of the Pastor Angelicus and the Rex Magnus was not sudden. And as it happened over time, they overlapped too. In fact, they would both enjoy great importance in Postel's view. Not only he believed to be the awaited angelic pope, but he envisioned too a universal French monarch ruled in the person of Francis I as the Rex Magnus of these prophecies. A similar view, but in this case pro-Habsburgic, was that of Galatino. The Franciscan not only believed to be the promised angelic pope himself, but he saw in Charles V the Rex Magnus who would unite all Christendom. Such identification of the monarch was made possible by a direct intervention on the text of the Apocalypsis Nova, most likely by Galatino himself. In fact, the Franciscan had written in his treatise, De Pastore Angelico, a series of undertakings that the Rex Magnus would operate before the arrival of the angelic pope. And while not explicitly linking them, they were an implicit reference to Charles V, describing the victories against the infidel both in Africa and in Europe. This description, based on the American expansion and the victories of Tunis in 1535 by the emperor, would be added to the text of the Apocalypsis Nova in almost identical terms, where the prophecy of the Rex Magnus was updated with the same signs described in the Pastore Angelico, which is this part about Regnum Novae Civitatis Obtinebit, which is obviously the expansion, the wide expansion in what was felt as a new continent now during the rule of Charles V, and then Infideles Percutiet in Africa et Poste in Europa. It's in Galatino's text that the passage appears for the first time, which would then appear in a good number of copies of the Apocalypsis Nova from the 17th century, especially of Hispanic provenance. This version of the Rex Magnus prophecy appeared too in some collections of pro-Habsburgic prophecies printed in Vienna and Munich at the end of the 16th century. The key to interpret the fragments of the Apocalypsis Nova in such way seems to be the interest of their editor, the Catholic polymath Johann Rasch, who had prophesied a number of times the defeat of the Ottomans and the arrival of the Emperor of the Last Days. His selection of prophecies from the Apocalypsis Nova consisted on a bricolage of the two passages that contain any political prophecies located in the 4th and 8th raptus, together with some fragments from the 10th sermon. Rasch omits those lines more theological or regarding Italy specifically, and instead elaborates on the prophecy of the Rex Magnus, combining it with a passage from the Sermones about the union of religious orders, which is this. It's necessary that we all unite under one fold, and specifically, he talks about the union of all religious orders, and yeah. It's hard not to read this insistence on religious unity in relationship to political unity, considering how the Rex Magnus appeared, in fact, as part of Rasch's response to a famous Protestant prognosticon that forecasted the Ottoman victories in Austria and the fall of the Habsburg House. The publication of a fragment of the Apocalypsis novel within a collection of other political prophecies is particularly striking when considered next to the only previous example of a printed prophecy of a printed fragment of the Apocalypsis Nova, which is the translation of the fragment about the angelic pope by Paolo Angelo in Venice in 1525, who was obsessed with church reform and the punishments he suffered while waiting for the angelic pope. In any case, these differences are not limited to the printed book. Manuscript copies of the text, either full or partial, bear witness of the different reception and interest that the Apocalypsis Nova sparked in the later phases of its circulation. Moreover, the identification of the Rex Magnus from the Apocalypsis Nova with a real king was not limited to Charles V. These prophecies, together with other rereadings of the text, were used by the Portuguese João de Castro as the proof of the promised return of the Encoberto Don Sebastião. Even if the version used by Castro while writing his Aurora da Quinta Monarquia, a collection of prophecies proving the messianic role of the Portuguese monarchy, did not contain Galatino's edition, the Portuguese author identified clearly the hidden king with the Rex Magnus, which you can see here. O grande rei de que fala o anjo não é outro que o rei Dom Sebastião. However, the vast prophetic literature regarding the messianic figures such as the Magnus Pastor or the Rex Magnus or the millenaristic ideas of reform are not limited to the early modern period. As we have pointed out during this workshop, many of the literary traditions that are common in the early modern period originate in the High Middle Ages or even late antiquity. Similarly, this process of rereading prophecies in political or religious terms explained here through the Apocalypsis Nova is far from being exclusive of the modern period. Other widely circulated texts bear witness of that versatility, like the Oracula Leonis that Michele mentioned before, where the main protagonist of the original Byzantine version from the 12th century, a messianic emperor, who would unite the Roman and Greek church, gather all humanity under one fold, was transformed in the Latin renditions of the text 2 centuries later into an angelic pope, inspired by the Pseudo-Jacobite tradition. Yet these changes in the interpretation of prophetical texts have been traditionally, and this is a point that I actually want to make, have traditionally been explained as the result of new political and social contexts, either the eruption of Charles VIII, in the Italian peninsula, or the expansion of the Christian kingdoms in the Iberian Peninsula during the so-called Reconquista. Prophetic literature has been considered as another weapon for political propaganda, as well as for cultural and social resistance. Such notion, often implicit in the histories of prophetism, tends to explain prophecy as this static, almost ahistorical vehicle for these tensions, one that is simply used according to the needs of the time. At the same time, this vision tends to isolate the secular manifestations of messianic thought from those strictly religious, without any organic relation between them. Precisely this process of political rereading of religious prophecies, explained through the case of the Apocalypsis Nova, suggests that these shifts are not related to isolated contexts, but that they reflect a general change in European messianism during the early modern period. Thus, to explain this process, it's necessary to relate these prophecies with the messianic overtones, with these prophecies with messianic overtones, to the deep changes in political theology of the time and the increasingly secularized reading formations that prophetic literature was part of during the 16th and 17th centuries. In other words, it's necessary to look at the own conditions of possibility rather than applying different political or social contexts as some sort of interpretative key. Bernard Töpfer writes, the hopes for a golden age of peace and justice during the Middle Ages were all oriented to overcome the deficiencies and deformities of the ecclesiastical body. During the early modern period, they will increasingly focus on the secular sphere of the king. Indeed, the political theology around the figure of secular and religious sovereigns underwent significant changes between the end of the Middle Ages and the early modern period. From the councils of Basel and Pisa Milan, Conciliabolo di Pisa Milano, the absolutist trends that had consolidated the idea of the Pope as a secular sovereign against the symbolic, sacralized vision promoted by the conciliarist sectors. Moreover, the universalist authority of the papacy was severely damaged after episodes like the sack of Rome or the appearance of the Protestant Reformation. And yet, however, these episodes alone would not suffice to explain the decline of the messianic hopes around the Pope. Rather, this slow shift towards the political sphere seen in the Apocalypsis Nova can maybe be better explained by connecting it to the expansion of the Iberian empires and the consolidation of a political theology, of a different political theology, of the monarchy. Indeed, the global expansion of Spanish and Portuguese monarchies made increasingly likely the identification with the fifth monarchy, the fifth empire, promised in the Book of Daniel, particularly after the union of the crowns in the Iberian Peninsula in 1580. But even long before that, the discovery of the American continent was immediately interpreted as the sign of the end of times. These territories were not only seen as a financial tool to fund the reconquest of Jerusalem, like in the case of Columbus, but as the ushering of a new age, which, following Matthew 24:14, and this gospel of the kingdom will be preached in the whole world as a testimony to all nations, and then the end will come, which would come to its fullest with the conversion of the American people. The same discussion about the origins of these people, the American peoples, located by some in the 10 lost tribes of Israel, would play a key role in the development of an idea of universal monarchy that would last until the end of time. As a result of this, the figure of the king would be invested with increasing importance within millenaristic thought. Specifically, the Spanish crown enjoyed a special autonomy regarding the evangelization of the American continent, with both literal and symbolical responsibilities for it. An example of this can be found, like just one, in the increasingly sacralized and messianic vision of the king by the Franciscan friar Toribio de Motolinía, one of Mexico's 12 apostles, like the Franciscans that went to convert Mexico, who in his famous letter to Charles V not only addressed him as the leader and captain of the kingdom of Jesus Christ, which has to fill and occupy all of the world, but also call him to fulfill his duties, quoting again Matthew 24, since the gospel of the kingdom will be preached in the whole world as a testimony to all nations, and then the end will come, it is necessary that his majesty hastes by its own office, the officio, in making sure that the holy gospel is preached in all of these lands. Portugal equally participated of these changes, although slightly later, and the providentialist vision of their expansion would grant more and more importance to the figure of the king. The complex prophetic cycle around the Encoberto Don Sebastião depended on a sacralized vision of the monarchy that not only interpreted the universal expansion as a sign of divine grace, but also saw in the king a messianic figure destined to bring a golden age. These are the premises of the fundamental text of Portuguese political theology, the so-called Oath of Afonso Henriques, a forgery that in the first years of the 17th century was presented as a document signed by the Portuguese king himself the founder of Portugal, as the proof of the divine mission entrusted by Christ to Portugal in the creation of a Christian empire. The American space undeniably played an important role in the millenarian expectations of a modern age. As a territory away from the major centers of power and political life, the descriptions of the continent were soon loaded with all of the Edenic topics and the locus amoenus, while much of the prophetic literature of the time establishes there the origin and center of the future Golden Age, as in the case of Francisco de la Cruz and in Brazil, the Santidade do Jaguaripe. However, contrary to what has been said in this regard, the influence of the discoveries in Christian prophetism of the modern age seems to go beyond a reaction against the expansion of the Catholic monarchy and its colonial projects there. In fact, it seems to transcend the same appropriations of these prophetic discourses by the monarchy. Like the example set forth in the case of the Apocalypsis Nova, the political reading of messianism at the beginning of the modern age permeates all social sphere and does not refer to an official propaganda scope, precisely because it's the result of a change in the same perception of the figure of the king and his relationship to his subjects. The king presents himself as well as an agent for reform with authority over what is increasingly considered as a global territory, and at the same time, an increasingly sacralized figure with, one could say, Byzantine overtones, with religious responsibilities for a new social body upon which the messianic hopes for a better world. Parallel to the change, and I'm finishing, in the political theology of the papacy and the monarchy, another factor in the process of political reading of prophecies of religious scope will be the increasing secularization of the prophetic phenomenon. Without obviously denying the existence in popular areas of previous messianic traditions around the figure of a future monarch or emperor, it's evident how, from the middle of the 16th century, prophetic literature seems to leave the ecclesiastical sphere and move its center of gravity towards the secular world, as in the case of the Apocalypsis Nova. This translatio prophetia, is also the result of a change, gradual but clear, in the reading formations within which prophetic literature is inserted in the modern age. This way of placing the interaction between text, society, and reading, closely linked to a complex cycle of production and consumption, allows us to critically rethink the relationship between prophetic discourse and its context, usually drawn by historiography. Far from being a mere vehicle of expression for the social and religious tensions of the time, prophetic discourse is itself a changing object that reveals its own historical circumstance. And to finish, in 1689, a friar, Francisco de los Santos, replied to a letter by the Duke of Pastrana, who requested a copy to be made from a book of El Escorial, where the friar worked as a lecturer. These were the Profecías de San Malaquías, the prophecies of St. Malachi, and the subtitle reads, "Touching Concerning the Kings of Spain." These prophecies were supposed to be a continuation of the more famous prophecies attributed to St. Malachi, a forgery from 1590 that prophesies each pontiff with a very short verse. In this case, however, the same format was applied to the kings of Spain. This example, although different, obviously, from that of the Apocalypsis Nova, showcases the main trait of the process that I have tried to identify in this presentation: a rereading of religious prophecies by readers from the secular world who, as it will seem from the Duke's letter and life, have an interest in this text for the sake of collectionism. The case of the Apocalypsis Nova is interesting in this regard, as unstudied its circulation is. The rereading and focus on the messianic role of the Rex Magnus is, we argue, the result of a new political theology of kingship, in which the king becomes the ultimate author of reform and change, and therefore the main instrument of God's will. Thanks to the long circulation of the text, from the early years of the 16th century to the end of 18th century, we can examine this shift of expectations traditionally placed on the Magnus Pastor to that of the monarch, even through periods when both coexisted, like in the case of Galatino and Postel. In our opinion, the importance of the overseas expansion of the Iberian monarchies has been underrated. Such interpretation of early modern prophetism is due also to a rethinking of its relationship with the historic context, reader and text, as well as the notion of reading formation. Framing this in a unique, mutually dependent relationship allows us to understand prophecies not as mere rhetoric, static device, but as a very much living and organic part of political and religious thought. Thank you.